So how do you figure out how your business can meet the needs of a certain niche of customers? You know, maybe you decide that you're going to do home catered meals or something like that. That's a little bit different than to go. But I think restaurants really have to figure out their point of difference within the community so that they, you know, aren't just trying to compete with every other business there.
What's up, Zach Oates here, author, entrepreneur, and customer relationship guru. Welcome to Give an Ovation, growth strategies for restaurants and retailers, where we find industry leaders to share their secrets to grow your business. This podcast is sponsored by Ovation, the actionable guest feedback tool that works on or off premise and is easy, real time, and actually drives revenue. Learn more at ovationup.com. Welcome to another edition of Give an Ovation. I am joined by Anne Rolke, and I'm so excited because Anne has such a unique blend of experiences that she's going to bring to this podcast. She's a strategic marketing and communications professional with more than 20 years experience as a chef, recipe developer, cookbook author, restaurant consultant, and former VP of marketing of the California Restaurant Association. And Anne, just tickled that you're with us today. So thanks for being with us.
Thanks so much for inviting me.
So, and what is the new normal? Everyone talks about the new normal, and you have such a vast array of experience with so many different restaurants. Would love to hear your opinion of the new normal.
Right. Well, I mean, you know, there's hardly any normal these days, so it's a little bit hard to say, but you know, I've certainly seen in some of the work that I've been doing that the restaurants that were set up for delivery and takeout before the pandemic are really the ones who are better served right now. They're easy. It's easier for them to work in this pandemic, you know, because they have things like packaging figured out and social media presentation of their dishes and, you know, things like that, that really don't work as well for fine dining or other kinds of full service. That's not to say that those restaurants can't do that, but they've got a little bit more of a hurdle to get over to feel like they can get to something that is what their customers are going to expect, you know, because customers don't necessarily understand that just because they're not sitting there in the restaurant, their food is not going to look as good or, you know, it's not going to maybe carry as well. So it's important for restaurants to also think about what they're offering for takeout.
And how do you recommend thinking through that? I mean, obviously you have extensive experience from both, you know, from the operation side of a kitchen with the restaurant, with the recipe creation all the way to the actual implementation as a chef. How would you recommend that restaurants think about their recipes and their menus in general?
Right. So, I mean, it depends a lot on how the customer is going to get that meal or that item. So some places are still open with outdoor dining here in California, for instance. So the restaurant has a little more control about how the item is going to appear, you know, whether it's still hot or still cold or still pretty on the plate. For things that have to be delivered, it depends a lot on who's doing the delivery. You know, are they keeping the temperature at a good level? Are hot items going to arrive hot, for instance? Are they going to look pretty when they get there? Are they going to be bounced around in the boxes?
Yeah.
You know, so I know for some restaurants, it helps for them to have people who sort of agree to be their eyes on the other end. You know, somebody who might say, okay, I'll order some things and then I'll take pictures and send them to you. Or I'll give you a little bit of feedback on the temperature. And I know, you know, for instance, that's something that you work on, but that's a great way to involve the customers and to feel like you're getting really actionable ideas on how to make things look and appear or look and taste as good as possible. And then the customers are getting to feel like they have a little bit of say. Because nobody feels like they have very much control right now.
Yeah, that's totally true. So are you saying that, you know, I know that H-Pat, we had him on a podcast, and he talked about kind of this board of customers, right?
Right.
So is that kind of what you're also suggesting, is that people have this board of customers? Or are you suggesting just, you know, gathering feedback from people on their orders, regardless of, you know, how frequently they order from you?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think it could work either way. I would think most restaurants would want to start with some trusted customers, friends, family type, who are going to give them honest feedback, but constructive criticism, not just, you know, this looked terrible and I'm not going to eat it. But, you know, why wasn't it as good as it should be? Or why was it great? You know, why were you pleasantly surprised? So I think that's always a good way to start, is to have a few people that you are kind of an inner circle, like a customer board, like Henry said. And then, you know, maybe then you roll it out to more customers once you feel a little more confident that you've gotten things dialed in as far as packaging and delivery and that kind of thing. And, you know, because you never know what's going to change over time too.
Right, exactly. And I think that's something that's so interesting, is it's so much about not what do we do today, right? Mm-hmm. But it's about how do I set up a system and a strategy to evolve as it is, right? Mm-hmm. Because this whole concept of the new normal, it's not a thing that just happens. It's something that we are, as I talk about, stepping into the new normal. And it's like a sunset or sunrise, depending on your perspective, right? Where it's gradually going to change. And it's not something that just, you know, is a cutoff. So I like what you're talking about, is really formulating these strategies to accomplish staying on top of the new normal.
Yeah, I think, you know, with the pandemic, things are changing so rapidly. You know, in California, for instance, restaurants were allowed to reopen, and then all of a sudden, a couple of weeks later, nope, they're closed again.
Right.
So, you know, for the poor business owners, even not just in restaurants, but especially restaurants, they have to try something and then be ready to pivot back again. Mm-hmm. You know, and move backwards or move sideways. And so I'm sure it takes a lot of energy to try to have plan A and B and C and D and be able to put those into action quickly. So I think, yeah, it's almost as if you have to be a little bit of a fortune teller. What could happen next? And then you have no idea and something else completely happens. And, you know, then you have to think of what to do.
Well, yeah, I think you're right. And in some respects, it is a fortune teller. In the other respect, like, there's just a few different scenarios, right? I mean, if you were to think of, okay, here's off the top of your head, if you were to think of, like, here are some scenarios that people should plan for, what would you recommend?
Well, I think, you know, as Henry said to you also, I think this is going to go on longer than we think, in that it's going to be a while until customers really feel comfortable coming back to indoor dining. Mm-hmm. So I think restaurants really should be planning for outdoor dining and to-go options. They shouldn't be waiting and thinking, well, I could make it a few more months and then everybody's going to come back. I don't think that that's realistic. So I think everybody needs to consider the options of less contact, what's going to make the customers feel most confident that they're safe, that the restaurant is safe, you know, that the restaurant doesn't have to close down because there are repeated infections of some, you know, a customer or a worker. So I think we really can't think that we're going back to what it used to be. I don't think it's ever going to be like that. So I think we have to just accept the fact that it's going to be different moving forward. And how can we make the businesses work within that new framework?
Yeah, that's a great point, because truly we were all kind of hoping it would be open by Easter, right? Mm-hmm. And here we are, you know, we're starting to kiss into fall,
right?
And things are regressing. And so I think you're absolutely right. Is like, I love that. Just think about your to-go, thinking about your outdoor plans, because there's going to be less restrictions outdoor, and, you know, look into, talk to landlords, talk to the city about, are there ways that you can convert space that right now you aren't using as outdoor dining? Are there ways you can convert that to outdoor dining? Mm-hmm. I like that a lot.
And I think a lot of cities, especially in California that I know of, are being much more flexible with that. They're letting business owners use sidewalk space or parking spaces because it's in their best interest too. I mean, restaurants bring in a huge amount of sales tax for states. And so, you know, the less business they have, the less sales tax the city has. And so hopefully they're seeing that connection with helping businesses, especially restaurants, continue to have some kind of space to serve people.
Now, do you think that that's going to be something, in your opinion, with cities kind of lessening the restrictions on that? Is that something that you think is going to continue? Is that something that's going to stay around? Or do you think they're going to pull that back and still say, hey, 25% capacity indoors?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think people are eager to go back to indoor dining. Some people are eager to go back to it, especially in places where it's going to be colder in the fall. I mean,
great point.
You know, in some parts of the country, luckily a lot of California, we can eat outside 9 or 10 months a year. Mm-hmm. I mean, even in San Francisco, where it's chilly, people eat outside nine or 10 months of the year.
I know, it's colder in the summertime there.
Right, but Wisconsin, Boston, you're not going to want to be outside. So what are those restaurants going to do? And I think, you know, the fact is they probably aren't going to be able to have 100% capacity. So do they need to look into outdoor heaters? Do they need to look into some kind of way to use previously unused space? You know, some restaurants have banquet halls and nobody's having banquets right now. Can they turn those into indoor but socially distant dining areas that would feel safe for everybody?
And I've seen people who are doing tented areas with heaters inside of that. Now, is that considered outdoor?
I think it is, but I don't know. According to each city's building code, I'm sure there's some esoteric rule that that determines it. If it's not a permanent structure, maybe it's still considered outdoor.
But I think your point is get creative and make a plan, right?
Look into what's legal. And don't hope that it's just going to go back to normal. Because, you know, even before the pandemic, that business model wasn't always working for people as well as they needed. You know, restaurants have had a lot of trouble with turnover, for instance, or they've had, you know, trouble with just the cost of rising labor costs. So, you know, what can they look at to help them save money, come up with new strategies, involve their staff and customers in collaborating on those strategies, you know, and not feel like the owner has to do it all himself or herself.
Right. Yeah. I think that's a great point, is that we're not in this alone, right? Mm-hmm. There's a lot of people who know our businesses. So seek the help from those people who are closest to you.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things I tried to help our members do when I was at the CRA was that, you know, we talked about things like figure out who your customer base is. And for a lot of restaurants right now, if they weren't QSR, their customers were not people who normally were doing a lot of takeout, maybe. Not from them, not from fine dining, you know, or upper end. Right. So they have to figure out who's their new customer or who can they appeal to now, and then go after that niche, you know, because everybody has to eat and not everybody cooks. So how do you figure out how your business can meet the needs of a certain niche of customers? You know, maybe you decide that you're going to do home catered meals or something like that. That's a little bit different than to go. But I think restaurants really have to figure out their point of difference within the community so that they, you know, aren't just trying to compete with every other business there.
Yeah, totally. Because I think you're right. In terms of our customer base as a restaurant, it's going to evolve. It's going to change. And there are people who might have eaten out, you know, fine dining, and maybe they don't quite have the budget to do that anymore, but they're used to eating out. Maybe it's elderly people who don't want to go, you know, because they're worried about going out. So I think you're absolutely right. Finding out that new customer base. And again, all of this only happens as you're talking to your customers. Mm-hmm. You could no longer be a passive restaurant owner and just kind of use the same playbook you've used for the last 20 years. you need to change things up. And the only way that you're going to find out is by connecting and understanding and learning with your customers. So as someone who is so familiar with recipes, you do cookbooks and stuff, how do you recommend restaurant owners and operators go about cutting things from their menu or changing things? I mean, we've got these emotional ties. A company just down the street, they took out the only thing that I get there, and I show up and all of a sudden it just says, you know, it says no longer serving and it's blocked out. And so I called headquarters and they're like, oh yeah, we took that off the menu. And I'm like, that's all I got from you guys. And they were like, well, sorry, no one ordered it. And I was like, okay, well, I should have gone there more often. But, you know, there's going to be that reaction to anything that you take off the menu. How would you recommend someone going about looking at their menu and deciding what to keep, what to cut, you know, things that might not travel well, things that might not stay hot? Like, how do you start something that is such an emotional process?
Right. Yeah, that's hard. I mean, I think, you know, most restaurants are going to know what are their top sellers. So if they can keep their top sellers on, those are obviously the ones that people are going to call and complain about if they get canceled. Yeah. You know, so if as long as it's not something that's really delicate or hard to package, I would say try to keep that item. But it may require some kind of special thinking. You know, for instance, French fries don't travel all that well when they're closed in a container. So, you know, talk to people in the area. What have they seen that works well for them with French fries? How do they recommend the customer eat that when they get it? Do they need to reheat it? Do they need to just eat it straight out of the container? And then, you know, for the recipes that are less popular or maybe have higher costs, you know, maybe you stop doing those for a while, or maybe just offer them for dine in on the patio and not as delivery. I think a lot of restaurants are really offering limited menus for delivery because it's easier to control the costs and the way that they appear and how well they travel, as opposed to things that might be specials or a little unusual. So I think that's interesting too, because I think, I don't know this for a fact, but I wonder if we'll see a little bit less specials. You know, how a lot of restaurants have normally done daily specials or weekly specials. That I think would be a little bit harder to control, because then you don't know as much about it. You don't know the history. How does it travel? How much does it cost? How much gets wasted? Do people order it? As opposed to something where you know, okay, 25% of our orders are going to include this hamburger or this sandwich. So we're definitely going to concentrate on having that as a to-go item and making sure it travels well. With higher end restaurants, I think that's where they really have to look into even more extensive types of packaging, or you know, something along the lines of some of the prepared meal companies that were doing a lot of business for a while, and then some of them went under. But, you know, different ways of packaging the food and giving it to the consumer. So maybe they assemble it on site so that the pasta is not sitting in the sauce for 20 minutes. Maybe that's something you combine when you get it.
Yeah.
You know, so thinking about some ways of maybe helping the customer to have a better experience on their end so that they don't feel disappointed and feel like they can't get what they want.
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, adding some butter, some oil to the pasta, having the sauce on the side, you know, that's a great way to do it. And, you know, if they want to add a little more, a little less sauce, I think that's, you know, it makes it more customizable. So in a way, it could make it a better experience in the end.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and sometimes people really like that. I mean, they like to have a little bit of control over their garnishes, or again, like you said, customizable. I mean, maybe you have a 12-year-old who doesn't really like spicy food and two parents who do, so they can add different things to the sauce, or, you know, they can put different garnishes on, and the whole family can still have essentially the same meal,
right,
but have it customized.
Yeah, I love that. Especially when I get things to go, I've always ordered the sauce and the stuff on the side, because mm-hmm. if it's sitting there in like the crispy chicken, and that gets soggy, and who knows if that, you know, third party delivery driver is going to be 15 minutes or 2 hours, you know, so I just like to play it safe. But so Anne, what would you have if you were to talk to every restaurant owner and operator in the country, what piece of advice would you give them? As if that's not a big question or anything.
Remember to breathe. that might be good. I think, you know, just try to stop and take a moment every day and think about what is the biggest hurdle and how can I get over it with help from other people. You know, I think a lot of times in business, everybody just sort of goes and goes and goes and goes and goes, and they don't stop and think strategically. They don't stop and think, okay, all of a sudden I realize that we're selling a lot of this kind of salad. Maybe salads are popular. Maybe we put more salads on the menu. Or I realize we're having a hard time getting employees to come back because they don't want to work in the restaurant. So should we look more at a to-go option or more of a delivery option, you know, hiring, using employees in different ways? So maybe, you know, instead of servers, they're delivery drivers. It all depends on what's available in that area. But I think just being as creative as possible, thinking this is an opportunity to think outside the box. I mean, it's almost like anything goes right now. If you can make it work, you know, cities and states are a lot more open to things that they haven't been in the past. There are lots of restaurants now that are doing to-go cocktails. It's almost like New Orleans all over the country.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. So, because the fact is that's where restaurants often make a lot of money, is in cocktails. So how do they continue to do things that help them to turn a profit in some way? You know, or is there a way that they offer multiple courses in one prefix meal so that, for instance, you know, if you have somebody sitting at a table, you can upsell them. Well, maybe you'd like a coffee with that. Well, maybe you'd like a dessert with that. But when people are ordering ahead, they're usually trying to be a little bit more careful. Right. Well, we'll just have ice cream at home. So maybe you make it a prefix meal. You know, you get all three or four courses for a certain amount of money. And then you have the opportunity to sell more, and they have the opportunity to have a more interesting experience. So it's all that, just thinking outside the box.
Like that. So, and here are my takeaways. One, I like how you talked about really think about how your items are appearing and how they're getting delivered, both in terms of visual, temperature, et cetera. Two, get proactive. Get a proactive strategy, not a reactive strategy. Okay. Do things like getting a board of customers. I love that, to get honest feedback where they'll take pictures, send it in to you. Three, have plans, have different plans for the different scenarios in terms of outdoor to go, winter. Plan on this being long term. Think about your new customer base. Four, in terms of your recipes, limit items for to go and delivery. I like your idea about prefixed meals. That way, you know, you're getting a little more dollar from it. And then lastly, take a minute every day to really think about what is my biggest problem, and tackle it one at a time and do it together. There's people on your team. There's people around you. There's support. There's podcasts like this. So do it together, because if you just let everything come in on top of you at once, it's going to be overwhelming. So, Anne, how do people find you, follow you?
Well, I'm on LinkedIn, of course, as Anne Martin Rolke, and I have a lot of my professional information there. I'm on other social media, but it tends to be personal. I'm also helping to run Feed the Frontlines 916 here, which is the Sacramento chapter of Frontline Foods. And we are raising money to deliver meals to frontline healthcare workers. So awesome. I'm running the social media on that, and you can always look for that on Facebook and Instagram. And I'm also with Rethink Restaurants now. So hopefully I'll be appearing a little bit more on their website and on their social media as well.
Awesome. Well, Anne, appreciate you coming on. And today's ovation goes to you for helping keep us all in line and sane. So I appreciate what you're doing out there to help get out great information and help these restaurants to get back on their feet. So thank you, Anne.
Thanks for the opportunity. I'm glad to talk to you.
All right. We'll talk to you soon.
Okay.
Glad you're with us today. And thank you. Thank you to the risk takers, the troublemakers, the crazies who are keeping this world clothed and fed. You're the ones who deserve an ovation. Again, this podcast was sponsored by Ovation. To see how we can help you grow your business, go to ovationup.com. Don't forget to subscribe. And as always, remember to give someone in your life an ovation today.